Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 307, being recorded on the 9th of December, 2019. On Teams with me, I have Kendall, Evan, Kale, and of course myself, and we're just us this week. We're going to do a little bit of an open discussion on some topics that the guys had in mind. So, but before that, is there anything, Evan? I noticed you put some updates in the OneNote. Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that, actually two that really caught my attention. So the first one is, and we actually get this request for a lot of services, but what we've recently rolled out in the East US and UK South is plan maintenance notifications for our open source databases. So Maria, Azure Database for MariaDB, PostgreSQL, and MySQL, they now have service health notifications for plan maintenance. And what this is let's say we know that we have to patch the underlying host. So we're going to trigger a failover to your secondary, and your secondary becomes your primary. In that scenario, now you're going to get a notification saying when we're going to go do it, and then we've done it, and then when we start, and then when we finish, right? Really, that way, if you do, you as a customer either need to kind of schedule something around it, or you need to be able to cross-check of, oh yeah, my, you know, 30-second blip on this day was due to plan maintenance. It's just really, really good information for us to surface to our customers. The other one was, and this is kind of one of my favorite features across the board is we have the concept of network security group tags, right? And what these allow customers to do is basically specify a service name, and then Azure Networking under the covers manages the IPs, right? So if you want to allow traffic to and from Azure HD Insight for your, you know, some particular VNet, now you don't have to worry about kind of controlling each IP address for all the management endpoints for that service. You can just say, hey, allow Azure HD Insight as your tag, and then that stuff will come through. There's similar tags for Azure Active Directory, Azure SQL Database, you know, Azure Application Gateway, all whole tons and tons of services, and there's more out there every day, but it just makes life easier from a management perspective.
And Evan, I believe this has been available for other services, right? It's kind of
correct.
Just catch up on HD Insight, really.
Yeah, absolutely. This is new for the HD Insight because they've historically not been in that list of service tags. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a good one. And I was really interested about the one that you posted on the bot protection rules that we now have in WAF and in our front door service. So we all know, I mean, and this, just to be clear, this is not bot like in the bot framework or anything like that. This is like the bots that you see on the internet, right? These are bots that are crawling the internet, and some of them are good. They're just trying to see what you have and index it, like the Bing bot or the Google bot. And then some are not so good that are trying to do all sorts of malicious things. And so now in WAF and in our gateways, you could enable this bot protection such that if these bots are categorized into three, like bad bots, good bots, and unknown bots, and you know, and you can decide what should happen when each of these categories are hit your endpoint, whether you want to allow them or block them and things like that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting because I actually didn't. I mean, it makes sense once I think about it, but I didn't realize that there actually is this concept of malicious bots that are out there, right? Things that are looking for, you know, I guess known vulnerabilities or whatever the case may be, but we know they're coming from a bad IP or a bad user agent, and that you can just block them kind of out of yep. hand. It's really kind of cool.
Another nice feature.
Yeah.
What else is that? I think it's, you know, the holiday week coming in. It's been a bit of a slow week, but I guess that's a good roundup on all the news. So why don't we have this talk about something that, Evan, you had in mind to discuss, you know, based on your current role?
Yeah, and this is actually, we've talked about this kind of in a general concept a couple of times over the years, but I thought it would be a good one to kind of bring in, you know, kind of a specific scenario. So in my role, I work with a lot of customers where, you know, something's broken, right? Something's not working the way they expect. And one of the tendencies I see from customers a lot is they immediately go to the cloud is breaking me. Right. I used to do this thing on premises and then I picked up my workload and I drop it into Azure and it breaks. So therefore it must be, you know, an Azure problem. Are there some class of those that where it is an Azure problem? Absolutely. But the vast majority of those, it's the same things that break you in the on-premises world, right? You know, bad queries or, you know, your firewall rules. You know, we were talking about the NSG. You know, management, right? Azure has the same concepts, right? That you do it on-prem. If you drop a VM in a subnet on-prem and you haven't set up your on-premises network, right? Your database may not be able to talk to your client front end. All that stuff kind of still comes into play. And what happened this particular customer is they picked up their website, they dropped their website in Azure. They have been doing a bunch of load testing. They've been doing everything previously, but like everything, once you go kind of production, you can't test everything, right? You test as much as you can, but they flipped the switch in their production environment and their database fell over, right? And they, the app was, slow responses. They debugged it down to the point where the database was wrong. So they rolled back, but they, the immediate jump was, well, what is Azure doing wrong? Why is Azure's database, problematic? Well, and it turns out, again, just like we've seen in the on-premises world for 30 years, that there was a bug in one of the layers where it was, issuing a very, very expensive query. And for whatever reason, the load testing they had been doing to date and the work they had been doing on premises just didn't test that particular piece of functionality, right? Because again, you can't test everything, right? You put in frameworks and you put in, what's the word for when you've got like dummy code that runs?
Mock tests or something.
They've got mock endpoints, right, for some of their APIs that you can't test in QA. And one of their mocks, it just wasn't actually calling the real stuff, right? And so they just didn't catch it. But it was just at the end of the day, it was a bad database query. Right?
So this was an end user activity that
eventually
causes and there's really, I guess users are the worst case scenario all the time. I hate to say
they will find your problems all the time, won't they?
Exactly. that's interesting because one of the things that we've been, when we talk to customers, and as a matter of fact, Kendall and I were at a customer recently. And
I saw the picture. Wait a minute, you guys actually got to hang out in person? That's so unfair.
Yeah.
Sajid's the best. I love working with him.
It was a real pleasure to have Kendall there. And, they always ask, okay, how do we do blue-green deployments, right? This is something that is become very popular these days. I think Netflix and others seem to have pioneered it. Like when you roll out something new and it's applicable to Azure, can you use something like Traffic Manager to kind of phase it in, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I got 90% of my code going on-prem the way I used to have it and 5% to the cloud. And then you kind of watch it, slowly until everything, and you keep changing that, move that needle over gradually. Is that something that could have helped in this scenario? I'm just curious.
Absolutely, because they would have, and I'm not 100% sure why this customer wasn't able to do kind of that configuration, but that's exactly the kind of thing that would sniff something like this out. Because again, there's only so many things you can test in QA. And so 5% of your traffic, you would have seen abnormal load, I would expect, on the database, right? More than you expected for 5% load. And it would have kind of increased their chance. In this particular case, the customer couldn't do that kind of blue-green. So they ended up running, they went from 0 to 100% on this kind of new deployment.
And then on the kind of on the monitoring side, I want to just understand is how quickly did they find this out? Did they have the right alerts or monitoring set up in place to catch this such that at least you guys got plugged in early on, or was it like a day before they figured out, oh, something's wrong with the website?
Yeah, no, that was actually one of the cool pieces. This customer really had a nice monitoring and alerting system set up. They were monitoring their WAFs. They were monitoring their app services, and they were monitoring the database. And they had all of that piped in through Azure Monitor. And they really quickly were able to see, hey, that their response times were out of whack. And then they were able to fairly quickly go through that data and see, and our response times are out of whack because our database is out of whack. And that, I mean, to your point, right, that's a painful thing if it takes you 2 days or 3 days to kind of figure out where your problem is, because then now you have to figure out how to fix it. Meanwhile, your customers have been in pain for several days. I don't know, I'm not sure about you guys, but I've seen, you know, a number of customers now where they're starting to standardize on either Azure Monitor or some third-party tool like Splunk that sucks in the Azure Monitor data, but now they have kind of this pretty close to a single pane of glass right across their entire application, which makes life infinitely better than if you have nothing, no telemetry at all. You're kind of diving deep in the logs to figure out whatever's wrong.
Yeah, I think one big thing that's improved over the years, like probably even like 5 years ago or something, it was much worse because mm-hmm. of things we didn't have, like network watchers and things right. like that. So that was always the issue of like, well, if I had it on-prem, I could just put a packet sniffer on here and see what's going on here if you needed to go to that level. And yep. it was just like no option at all for the cloud. But I think pretty much it seems like that bar has been pretty low now, right? There's like almost nothing. It's if you can do it on-prem, you can almost do it in the cloud, right? There's in some fashion kind of way.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you have to – I think your packet trace is a good example, Kale, where you don't collect it in the same way you did previously, but you can get a lot of the same data. And actually, what's interesting, I just saw this morning, Azure Monitor now has integration with Network Watcher. So you can, in Azure Monitor, you can see your components in this kind of visual representation. It'll show you where your latency is in your architecture. And then you can actually click into the individual resources to go to the property pages for those resources to drill further. But it's the same data. It just kind of like you're not necessarily looking at a raw packet capture unless you have to. And then if you have to, you collect it with NetWatcher instead of remoting into these VMs to go get it, right? You leverages the agent capability at that point.
Yep.
So another thing I wanted to find out from that scenario is What's queue of SQL? Is it a SQL Server or what kind of database was it?
In this particular case, they were using Azure SQL DB, so a flavor of SQL Server.
So, could the scale out features? I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, if it was getting hammered, how come, like, you know, the scale out or scale up didn't kick in? Is that not something that would have helped in this scenario, at least alleviate the pain for?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think in this case, that actually was like the first thing they did was they scaled the database up. And then unfortunately, because of the way the load and the way the bug surfaced, that still wasn't sufficient. And then SQL, actually, I think this is true for all relational databases. I can't think of any true relational databases, right? Classic relational databases. They all kind of run within a single instance. Right. Most of them, for you to be able to scale out, you kind of have to have some sort of elastic scale or, you know, kind of modified T-SQL approach. But for the classic ones, you know, MySQL and Azure SQL DB and SQL Server, you always have one instance that's doing it. But that was kind of the first thing to do was scale it up, which, again, we've talked about this before on the show. How easy is it in the on-premises world to scale your VM up? Right. If you even have it, it's a night, like maybe you're on a VM and you can assign it more resources, mm-hmm. But maybe, right? That's generally not the case, even in the on-premises world. And you certainly can't scale up as large as you can generally. But yeah, they did that first and that wasn't enough for them to catch up, right? They were still struggling from a performance perspective. That's the point at which they rolled back. But that absolutely is a knob that you can turn, then it's much, much harder to turn in the on-premises world than it is when you go into the cloud.
Yeah, and you guys were talking, Saji, you were talking about blue-green there a minute ago too. I mean, in the past, you know, as Evan mentioned, you know, there usually is some sort of centralized component in the application. Certainly people work to make sure that that's not a bottleneck, right? Or a few bottlenecks. But generally when you're cutting over, at least my history in the past has been, things, especially like databases, become that thing of like, correct. Well, it's all or nothing. I can't have it running twice. I can't have it running here and here because then I have analytics that's reading off of it or something like that. And I can't do that because I have multiple. But what's your experience been there, Sajid, when, especially, I don't know if you have any experience on the blue-green side, how people are doing that with data. I can get the app side, but I don't know about the data.
Yeah, you know, I somehow thought you were going to ask that question. I was thinking about it too. Like, I know Kale's been thinking about data these days. He's going to ask this question. So obviously, you know, when it comes to SQL Server, we do use like log shipping or some form of replication, and you kind of have to do that, right? Yeah, eventually you want to have these two databases or data sources in sync, because as people are, some users are updating each side, you want the other side to be notified. So you kind of have to do that. And then eventually when you slide the dial all the way on-prem, all the way to the cloud, assuming everything went well, at that point, when you have no more traffic yet on the on-prem database, you'd have to run like a special job to make sure that everything was, you know, just copied over and synced up. No different from many of our Azure services, right? Cosmos DB and things like that. There's always this sync up that has to be done when you have it in two different places, and some form of replication has to be in place. And eventually, you have to make sure that everything's copied over. In the case of Cosmos DB and others, the planet scale databases, that's done automatically by the service, but under the covers, that's exactly what they do. They have some sort of replication or feed, that's a change feed that's been being piped from one place to the other. Does that make sense, Kale? Is that what you had in mind too?
Yeah. It's funny that it comes back to old school stuff, like the log shipping days are still going on, right? We still use this.
Yeah. I ran into somebody who was using SQL Server replication the other day, so the old stuff is still has a business value, because I think, Sajid, your point's dead on, right? At the end of the day, or maybe Kayla, it was you that said it. At the end of the day, like your data is your single source of truth. You can't. It's really hard to have multiple copies of your data, right? Especially when you're talking about things like orders and users, right? I mean, there is only order number blah. There should only be one copy of that. And there's just not a great way to flip that over. I think DNS is the other one that I see people struggle with a lot. But I think that's where if you lift and shift something where it's an existing DNS record going to a single deployment, that's where you can get yourself into trouble. I think that's where things like Traffic Manager in the front, right? That allows you to do some of that red green. I'm thinking Christmas. I'm stuck on Christmas here is my problem, apparently. The blue green testing, right? It's hard to do that without something like Traffic Manager in front, right? Because DNS is one record, right? So thinking about those possibilities.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about that. What many of my customers have asked is, you know, that feature of Traffic Manager to do the blue green or the, you know, percentage of traffic routing is great. What do you do? But that only works at the DNS level, right? Let's suppose you have some of your traffic on-prem and some in the cloud. It doesn't seem like, unless your on-prem is made available externally, you can't really use Traffic Manager, because Traffic Manager only works for publicly available endpoints, right? It's a public DNS service. It's not something that works with, say, your internal DNS service. If you have some traffic that has to go internally where it's not exposed externally. So what do you, like, you know, in those scenarios, it seems like when we looked at it, you have to come up with your own system. Buy some commercial software, Azure, or we don't provide anything in that regard.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that works for private DNS. I mean, we do have private DNS capabilities, but I don't think it has to the best of my knowledge, it doesn't have the, you know, blue-green load balancing capabilities that Traffic Manager does. Although I got to think we're working on it somewhere, because it's just a DNS record, right? From that sense, internal versus external is just an implementation aspect. But yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, just going forward, I think, and Kendall will know this, like when you come into containers or Kubernetes and you use those kind of systems, you could use tools like Traffic, et cetera, that kind of have that native capability, right? You could set them up as sidecars, and you could do this kind of routing of traffic automatically inside of your cluster. I think that's just going to become second nature going forward, is where that feature will always be available to you. But I think we're it's going to be a little bit of time before everybody gets there, of course, because you have to move to the container world.
So to be clear, because I'm still kind of coming up to speed on containers. You guys have been proud of me. I deployed my first AKS container app about 2 weeks ago.
Very nice.
I think it's the voting on pets. You vote cats or dogs or something like that. I forget the sample. But what y'all are talking about when you say the sidecars, this is another container that spins up that you have a dependency on that container, then it allows you to do kind of intercept or do some other things so that your code doesn't have to know or care about what you're implementing in that sidecar. Is that right?
Yeah. Kendall, do you want to comment on that? This is your area.
I think that's pretty much a fair statement. I mean, essentially within Kubernetes, you don't really look at things at the container level. You look at this pod level. And a pod is typically like a one-to-one relationship with a container. But when you have a sidecar container, it's typically in the same pod. So there are things that if you were like thinking about the on-premises world, maybe they're like two processes that you want to host on the same physical machine. You want to make sure that they're co-located. And typically it's some type of dependency that you want to move out of the application code. So be it like something to do with network traffic, or maybe it's some kind of like logging, things like that are typically going to be a side or deployed as a sidecar. If you've thought anything about, or if you've heard anything about like the new Dapper project that Microsoft came out with, which helps with kind of developing microservices, you'll have a Dapper sidecar. So it's things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. At the end of the day, it allows you to still kind of keep your containerized mindset, but you can have this dependency that can change over time independently from your own code.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah. And as a developer, I don't have to code that in every application because this is just, these are cross-cutting concerns like security, logging, et cetera. You don't have to do that. It's just you get it by default just by attaching to the sidecar container.
Makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
It's an interesting though conversation, even just about, I know we've kind of talked about moving into the containerized world or even just the Azure space or any other cloud, and you start to kind of change the way that you approach certain problems when in reality, it's just still the same. You still should take the same approach, use the same mindset. And one of the, with some of the customers we've been talking to recently, I know Siji relates, there's a lot of conversation about like, how does this change like the developer story? Like how do we migrate from the world that we've known when it comes to developing applications to like now move this into this containerized workflow and things of that nature. So I still think that there's a lot of opportunity in the development space to kind of ease the transition between the world of development we know now and then the world of developing for the cloud, especially for the local developer. So I think that that story is still being written. And I think that there's a lot that we as Microsoft can do to kind of help educate customers on that transition. So
it sounds like we would probably start seeing both Microsoft and other companies release sidecar implementations of their service, right? Or some feature, some component, right? Release it as a sidecar so you can use it in the containerized scenario and then drop it in wherever you need without having to worry about, hey, this is, in this case, I'm going to containers versus I'm using the same product in my, on-premises implementation. Like I just don't have to care where it is. I just deploy it as that container and regardless of where I'm doing it.
Yeah, I feel like the general move to, because like customers can containerize their workloads and then other customers can consume, can deploy that particular container. But I think the sidecar, when we talk about like service meshes and all of that, there's just certain scenarios where you wouldn't want to deploy something just like on its own independently. It needs to interact with the custom container or the custom application you've deployed as a container. So I think that's where sidecars really are beneficial. But yeah, in general, I think it's more just customers are going to start containerizing their services, and then customers can use that, be it as a sidecar, depending on the use case or the actual application itself. So yeah, there's just so much fluidity in this space. And I think it's really cool because we're just going to see so much modularization in the future. And it's cool to see projects coming out of Microsoft, like this Dapper project I'm super pumped about, because it's like there's so many cross-cutting concerns when it comes to like, how do we really standardize the way that we develop microservices, especially in, whether we want to run them in AKS or in another platform. And so it's neat to see some of these things being, you can create these because of this whole modularization story and because of the way that the infrastructure we're running things on is being abstracted and evolving. So yeah, it's super cool. I highly recommend everyone go check out some of the projects that have come out of Microsoft recently. There's the open application model. And then I believe Rudder, R-U-D-R, is our actual implementation. And then there's also this Dapper project, which you can use on Kubernetes, but you can also run other places to help with the development of microservices. So so yeah, it's neat stuff.
Indeed. Yeah. Evan, I'm just wondering, when you, with you back to your case, was there, at the end of it, was there any discussion or do these customers have any plans to modernize these applications into the world that Kendall was just talking about, right, into the containerized world? Or are they like, okay, you know, we want these applications to be the way they are. They work fine, and they use SQL Server, and we're okay with that.
But yeah, actually, in this particular case, they're kind of, they are definitely doing some modernization, right? So this particular application deploys on top of Azure websites, or in this case, they were actually using an Azure application service environment, so an ASE, and on top of Azure SQL DB versus on premises, I believe that this was sitting on IIS and a SQL Server instance. Right, so they kind of took some of the first steps of, they didn't go all the way to containers, but they were absolutely moving towards platform as a service solutions instead of infrastructure as a service solutions, which is, you know, again, there's pros and cons to containers versus PaaS services, but, you know, losing the either one of them kind of gets you out of that whole managing the infrastructure world, which was the huge step forward for them in this case. So they were absolutely taking some modernization steps. It was just more towards the PaaS world rather than the containerized world.
Which is fine, you know, as long as they have, they're moving into a more, I'm sure Kendall loves to use the word cloud native, into that kind of model, then I think they should be fine.
Agreed. Yeah, that was one of the things we talked to them, this was kind of before I got involved, but very early on about, hey, you're moving, this would be a great opportunity to look at going to SQL Azure, right? Because it is, from a functionality perspective, it is completely compatible with SQL Server. And so having the ability to move to that PaaS platform at the same time really opens up some possibilities.
Great. This has been a good discussion, Evan. Thank you for bringing that up. I know you had some others as well, but maybe we can discuss that on another show. This is I like this kind of these kind of episodes where you're talking about real world problems that customers are facing, so that our listeners can make sure they don't make the same mistake again. Right? This is what's happening out there, and you got to watch out. Anything else you wanted to discuss before we wrap up for the day? Gail, Kendall?
No, the only thing I would say is it doesn't just have to be us bringing up these things. So if any listeners out there have some stories or anything they would like us to kind of talk through or discuss or anything, feel free to ping us on Twitter or post something to the website so we can talk about it.
That would be a fantastic conversation if anybody wants to come on.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And, you know, I understand that sometimes people are concerned about, their own company information or something. We can have the conversation in a very generic way, such that it doesn't have to be specific to your organization or things like that, you know. Excellent. All right. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you guys next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you folks later.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.